Shalom, damn it! It's 11 o'clock at night and time for Dave's Gone By, a comedy talk show on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. It's not the best show on the radio, but let's face it, do you really deserve the best? No, so sit back and settle.
When a man is born, he's born with the foreskin. But the complete man is to be without the foreskin.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Every color of day, whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everyone. Welcome on this Sunday night, the last, or not even the last night of summer. It's the first night of fall here on Long Island. And welcome to the Daverhood. Dave's Gone By on the air since October of 2002 on AM 1240 WGBB and live streaming on the web at AM 1240 WGBB.com. We are here for the 291st episode of this program, an hour of comedy, talk radio, interviews, music, and more. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, theater critic, and fall guy. And I've got my guest co-host with me, as I very often do. He's, I forget the official intro for him, but something like bon vivant, man about town.
That's
something
right.
About
I am
that.
A bon vivant man about town.
Jeff Goodman. How are you, Jeff?
Good. How are you, Dave?
You still have that cough.
Never going to get rid of that one.
What do you mean never? You're going to be coughing until you're 80? What?
I think so.
Okay. Do you still have the sleep apnea? That was fun.
That could be.
The reason I was not here last week, ladies and gentlemen, I had initially planned to have a live new program last week. But, you know, I've been working hard, and it's been a very tough summer. I had a lot of bad stuff happen, you know, personally. Nothing so terrible. Well, there was a death, but it wasn't in my immediate family, so we dealt with that and all sorts of things. I wanted a party, and I wanted a party the way I used to have to coincide with the hilarious Chabad Lubavitch telethon that they've been doing for 30-odd years on Channel 10 on cable. It's actually Channel 55. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to do a repeat of Dave's Gone By last week, and Stephanie was kind enough to take the reins here, and she played the interview with Reckless Eric, which was really cool. But at home, we were watching the telethon, we had friends over, we had food and pizza, and I invited Jeff, because I would have...
House band?
What was that? What?
It was Party at Dave's House.
Party at Dave's House. Jeff, of course, you know, in one of the biggest insults ever, arrives with like 10 bags of goodies and noshes and drinks, like, and tells me in front of everyone,
no,
Dave, I brought lots, because I figured you wouldn't bring enough food for everybody.
I didn't say that in front of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think you have enough food, so I brought
all
this
food. Well, Dave, you told me you were getting a pizza and seltzer.
Yes, pizza, seltzer, and syrups, because it was a Jewish kind of a thing. It was kosher pizza for one person who was kosher, and we didn't want to spend the money, so we got unkosher pizza with flies and roaches on it for everybody else.
Ooh, no, that was delicious.
And instead of soda and wine and whatever, we figured we have seltzer and all these different syrups where people can make their own sodas, like chocolate.
I didn't know it was like theme party.
Nobody touched the syrups. People drank the one bottle of Coke. Also, I brought from Trader Joe's like a lemonade, an organic lemonade, and that went pretty well. So
it was scared of the seltzer. It was seltzerphobic.
And you brought a bottle of
Diet Coke.
Cherry.
Pathmark.
Pathmark Cherry Coke, which you drank half of, which is good. I'm just finishing the last of. So I'm glad you brought the thing that
and
you
And I brought
had.
Little Debbie's, which were a big hit.
Little Debbie's were a hit. Still, I've got
the
a pound
Cheetos.
Cake that we didn't even open. The Cheetos were good. I brought in half a bag here for the WGBB staff. So, but the best part, aside from watching the telethon, what was your favorite part of the evening?
Leaving?
I'm sorry. Gee, well, yeah, I thought the best part for you, best part for a lot of us was watching you. because about 10 minutes after you sat down and after you played with a dog and tortured our dogs for a little bit, you started sleeping. You know, and you were, you know, just like your head didn't just nod and you were like, no. You were sprawled across half our couch with your head to the side, your leg like out like this. Well, people can visualize this.
Really?
And we were just, in the middle of watching this telethon and watching all the Jews dancing and the rabbis talking and Jerry Weintraub giving his speeches, there's you on the couch at our party, at this party, which is supposed to be this lively, fun event. And we're just all looking at Jeff, and you would wake up for a moment and then fall right back to sleep.
Really?
And you were even talking in your sleep sometimes.
Really?
You were like a comment that was sort of related to what's going on, but wasn't really. It was wonderful.
Wow.
You're like the ultimate bad guest. It's fantastic.
Oh, you have to tape that.
Well,
guess I do have sleep apnea then.
Well, yeah, no, I have to honestly say, I'm not joking, and I probably shouldn't even say this on the air, but my wife was scared. I was a little scared. We thought you were dying. Until you started snoring, and you were just, like, out, we thought, oh, my God, he's dead on our couch. And then you went, and then we were like, well, he may die on our couch, but probably not. But it was good to have you. For the moments you were awake,
I did enjoy the telethon, but I enjoyed playing with your dogs more.
Oh, very, yeah.
The children are lovely.
Aren't our dogs so cute?
Your dogs are adorable.
Well, thank you.
And I love the ball obsession.
I beg your pardon? You want to rephrase that?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way,
you're
know what I also love?
Balls.
I love sponsors. I love the sponsors of this program, and I'm so excited. Let's talk about the three that we usually have.
Uh-oh.
We have a new one, too.
Oh, my God. How'd that happen?
Oh, my nipples are pointy.
It must be the balls for the dogs.
That would do it. You know our usual sponsors. Why don't you do them?
Sure. We have the Copy Kings of Broadway. Hewlett Minuteman Press.
That's right. 10% off at Hewlett Minuteman Press for all Dave's Gone By listeners.
But
check
no Lohmann shoes.
No, they're next to what used to be the Lohmann shoe store. They're about three blocks from the almost about to open Dunkin' Donuts, but it's probably best known that they're across the street from the regular old Lohmann's that's still there. Hewlett Minuteman Press. The Copy Kings of Broadway. Also,
then there's the Bible of Broadway.
Which is?
That would be Performing Arts Insider.
A little hint there for Jeff. Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, to which Jeff subscribes, thank you very much, which has been around for 65 years and tells you everything you need to know.
Everything.
About Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and beyond.
Thank you, Ed McMahon.
That's right. And Dave's Gone By listeners get a special, really big discount rate on subscriptions to this hard copy journal, Performing Arts Insider. Please go to davesgoneby.org for that information. And for more information about this journal, which really is an incredibly handy and informative guide to the whole Broadway and off-Broadway season, go to performingartsinsider.com.
And Dave's had a bad summer, so please subscribe.
You know, yeah, please do. I get a little kickback from it. I don't get any kickback from fancy schmancy balloons, but for some reason.
But you would if we ever had any business.
Well, what is fancy schmancy balloons?
Fancy schmancy balloons is a lovely company that seems to be going out of business.
Well, how can people keep fancy schmancy? You're really doing a wonderful ad for yourself here. You might as well cut it right now.
It's all right.
If we're going out of business, there's no business.
You
can
call, you don't call. It's all the same to me.
Well, people do call, and they're doing a party. And they want the party to look good with centerpieces and balloons.
Not good. Fabulous.
Fabulous. And fancy and schmancy. Call Fancy Schmancy Balloons at
516-797-3229.
Thank God you remember your own phone number. 516.
I'm trying not to cough in the middle of it.
Oh, 797-3229. Your mic's down if you want to cough. 797-3229. Come on, the holidays are coming up. Get Jeff to do the balloons and the centerpieces and all kinds of decorations for your parties. And now, so very, very excited about our new sponsor, which is not new to me, because my family has been going to this restaurant for more than 30 years, ever since we've lived on Long Island.
Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Good God, no. First of all, my family would never go to Kentucky Fried Chicken. My regular family, the one I was born with, was a kosher. But no. The Woodrow Delicatessen in Peninsula Shopping Center in Hewlett.
I've been there.
Of course you've been there. Everybody's been there. They've been around for 47 years.
I have.
And they're one of the best delicatessens on Long Island, which makes them one of the best delis in the world, really, in New York.
It's the truth.
Everything except the pastrami, which has to be smoked elsewhere, all the other food is freshly made in the store.
Say everything except the pastrami is fresh.
No, the pastrami is good.
The pastrami this
the pastrami is fresh, it's delicious, but they can't make it there. They don't have a smokehouse. Pastrami has to be done elsewhere. But everything else...
So you can't smoke the turkey there, either.
You can roll it up, and you can kind of put it in a bung, but you can't really smoke it. But they've got every... I mean, I have been eating there since I was a kid, and it's not like I got tired. I still go there with my wife once a week sometimes. She gets an omelet because she's a vegetarian. They can make a delicious vegetable omelet. But I'm there to have the Romanian tenderloin, all the different kinds of chicken that they do, to have a good pastrami or tongue or a corned beef sandwich.
When was the last time you had a good tongue?
Actually, I had it at the Woodrow 3 weeks ago. It comes with a sweet and sour sauce. I had some good tongue. When was the last time you had some good tongue, Jeff?
A long time. I remember it's tasty and bumpy.
No, it's kind of slippery. It's very thinly cut.
No, but
it's
when you...
Oh, you mean when you're... Oh.
When they're slicing it. I don't care whose tongue it is. When they slice that tongue, I go, ow, ow, ow.
Well, it doesn't look like a tongue. I know a lot of people find tongue a little bit, but I'm telling you, it's delish.
It is.
And so are so many things.
It's almost as good as their knish.
Knishes are good. They're good, very good French fries there. You can get a roast chicken and then take that home also where they do a chicken.
You could, live there for weeks.
Yeah. Of course, hot dogs and frankfurters, all kosher, and they're open 7 days a week. I know it's a kosher deli, but yes, they're open Friday nights and Saturdays for lunch and stuff like that. And it, as I said, been around forever. Norman, who's the owner, the co-owner, has been there for almost 5 decades. The waiters are really, really cool. I can't say enough about them, especially now that they are sponsors of Dave's Gone By. So visit the Woodrow at the Peninsula Shopping Center in Hewlett, Long Island, and find out more at woodrowdeli.com. And there's only one W in that. It's W-O-O-D-R-O, deli.com. Okay, just want to tell you a couple of other things to let you know that if you like this show, you want to hear older episodes of this program? Well, there are a couple of ways you can always do it. You can go to the radio station website, am1240wgbb.com, and there's about 20 episodes there that you can listen to anytime for free. But now, we're also migrating bunches and bunches of episodes to my website, Dave's Gone By. They're free there, too. You can download them as podcasts. You can also listen to them right on the site. Don't have to download them. They'll just stream. And there's cool pictures with all the shows that we've got up there. We have almost 50 episodes available now at davesgoneby.org. Check them out. They're not quite in order.
Where is episode one?
Episode one hasn't been loaded on yet, but every episode from 2008 is on the website. Really going back to late October of last year, we have them almost all on. So definitely go to davesgoneby.org for that. Now, wow, already running a little bit over time, so let's just say who's going to be on tonight's very special episode.
Who's going to be on tonight's Dave's Gone By?
Mama Lucy.
He died.
Well, yes, Desi Arnaz died a long time ago, but his iconhood, his legend, as it were, remains. And it's being brought to life off-Broadway with a show opening this week called Baba Lucy. It's a not quite a one-person show because there's a 7-piece band involved, but a guy named Greg Pernhagen, who looks and sounds quite a bit like Desi Arnaz, is doing a show about Desi and his music, and he's singing Babaloo and Cuban Pete and all those different songs.
Does he have a Lucy who tries to get in on the act?
I think there is an actress involved who bounces off him just a little bit. But it is his show. He's been doing it in cabaret for a few years, and now it's got a real big off-Broadway opening, and we're going to be talking to and meeting Greg Pernhagen. Rhymes with Hagen.
Is he Babalicious?
I hope so. I wouldn't know. But we're going to be having some can't think of a pun right there. I let that one drop. I'm sorry.
Wonderful.
But, yeah, it should be a very, very fun conversation in studio with Greg Pernhagen to talk about his show and music and other stuff like that. And then we'll have Inside Broadway, where we'll talk about Broadway news. And also, if there's time, we have Iris Dorbian. She is a theater critic and also the author of a new book about the great Broadway producers from the past and also of present times. And we'll both be talking about a show that we've each seen called The Quarrel. It's a kind of a Jewish-themed, Holocaust-themed show. So it's going to be a real fun conversation. We're going to review it right here on Inside Broadway on Days Gone By.
If we really have time, can we discuss this month's issue of Buttafuoco magazine?
What the heck is
this
that?
This is in the lobby of WGBB.
Well, I'll bet you that's a relative. The lawyer things, they're probably here for a show, and they dropped off these booklets of people hoping to hire the Buttafuoco family.
It seems they represent the little guy in quotes.
Well, if the little guy wants to take a shot, thank you. Thank you very much.
I just think that he got in trouble with his little guy, didn't he?
Oh, that was Joey had the one with the thing.
No,
snip. No, that
was the one who had the girlfriend.
Right. That was,
Who shot
she was
Mary
a porn
Jo.
Actress. Right, right. So I was right about the shot.
She was a porn actress.
Yeah,
she grew up in Merrick.
Yes, but she ended up releasing like a homemade sex tape last year. Amy Fisher.
Oh, did she?
First she became a writer. She was writing for New York Press. Well, I couldn't even write for New York. Or New York, one of those pages, papers. And now she released a sex tape last year to show that she was still somehow a viable celebrity of some sort. I haven't seen it, but apparently she's something of a MILF. Mothers who fire at people. I don't know what. I'll have to work on that, too. Anyway, let's get to work with Greg Pernhagen.
Babaluti.
Right after this. Print it, copy it, send it as a gift. All that and more at Hewlett Minuteman Press, your full-service printer, family-owned and operated since 1975. Photocopying, printing, wedding invitations, and great gifts, Minuteman. 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Call 516-569-5577. 569-5577. On the web at hewlett.minutemanpress.com. And mention Dave's Gone By to get 10% off.
Vamos, nega, que ahí viene la conga. Vamos pronto pa' Cumbancha. Oye, como suena el cencerro, la tambora, que alegre tan. Vamos, nega, que ahí viene la conga. Ahí vamos pronto pa' Cumbancha. Oye, como suena el cencerro, la tambora, que alegre tan.
Lose, and Lose, I'm home. Now, that's pretty bad. I want to hear that good, don't you? Let's hear the real kind of Desi do that.
Lose, honey, I'm home.
Pretty good, pretty good. Say something else Desi-esque.
Something Desi-esque. What would I want to say? Ladies and gentlemen, I have been married to this woman for 13 years, and she still drives me crazy, but I love her.
Very nice, very nice. No, that's not Denzel Washington, and no, it isn't Lou Jacoby. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a person impersonating, or will be impersonating, Desi Arnaz.
Channeling.
Channeling him, that's right. Bringing him through in a Whoopi Goldberg kind of a way in Ghost. Greg Pernhagen, and am I correct? Because it rhymes with...
That's very good.
Thank you.
It's a Haagen-Dazs with a Pern in front of it.
Haagen-Dazs with a Pern, ladies and gentlemen. Greg Pernhagen is doing a one-person show. Well, actually, there's a couple of other people, and there's a band.
A very nice band, seven pieces.
His first
band was, he was actually in a group called the Siboney Septet, but there were only five people in it, even after he joined, so...
Okay.
I think it sounded better with the S's, the Siboney Septet.
And also, it makes you sound bigger. Once they're in the club, they pay the money. If they only see five people on stage, they're,
He's taking a break.
Where's the trombone player? Oh, well, doesn't matter. I'm drunk anyway. So, did Siboney mean anything? Was it a member of the band? Or?
No, there was a tune called Siboney back, this was like in the 30s in Miami.
But, sounds like a joke. Like, my daughter is so bony, she can squeeze through the camera. But we are, gosh, well, I didn't even get to properly introduce you. This is Greg Pernhagen, as we said.
Hello.
He's doing a one-person show called, with all these other people, called Baba Lucy. Baba Lucy, off-Broadway at the Actors Temple Theater. It's right on the west side, 339 West 47th Street. And it's, as the title suggests, and as we've been goofing about already, it is the life story of Desi Arnaz through his music, and also through the tales that he tells through Greg Pernhagen. So, Greg, first of all, what are some things that people, our listeners, might not know about Desi Arnaz that would surprise them?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that surprises a lot of people is that his career as a band leader was quite huge. He was very successful before he met Lucy, and after World War II, his band was one of the most successful big bands. You know, a lot of big bands started to kind of go into decline, and his actually took off. I mean, he broke and tied records with, like, Tommy Dorsey out at these big venues in the Midwest. You know, so I think everyone thinks that he only became famous because of the show, and that he only, you know, became famous because of his wife, and he actually brought a lot to the table.
Why do you think America was particularly ready for that Cuban Latin music? Was it a real big thing? There was Xavier Cugat.
Exactly, yeah. Xavier Cugat was his first mentor, but Cugat discovered him, basically, in Miami when he was, you know, I think he must have been 21, 22, and, you know, took him on the road, and that's, he said, you know, that was his musical education right there. You know, he didn't have to go to a conservatory. He learned the business from the inside,
right,
watching Cugat deal with the band.
But what do you think it was about the music in that period of American...
Well, part of it, you know, it was the exotic appeal. I mean, you're looking at, like, Valentino had already kind of come and gone. I think people were traveling to Cuba and to the islands, and, you know, it had this kind of exotic appeal in it. You know, the beat and the rhythm, you know, the dancing was very exciting. The other thing is that Cugat and Desi and some of the other bands, they tailored their music, you know, they sort of made it Latin hybrid so that, you know, it was meant to be, you know, palatable to American audiences. It wasn't as, you know, it wasn't like Buena Vista Social Club, which is a little bit more, you know, kind of authentic to the music that's happening in Cuba now, or had been happening, you know, when they first formed. So, you know, Desi said he wanted, you know, the strings of, you know, castellanets with the percussion of machito. He used a different word, but anyway, the balls of machito.
That's fine.
If I can say that.
The
cojones of machito.
because, you know, he wanted, you know, that excitement of the rhythm, because he had, you know, and here's the other thing that people are surprised. He didn't do Babalu until, it was like well into the 40s. You know, I think everyone thought that, you know, he like came out of his mother's, you know, the womb, you know, singing Babalu. And it's kind of surprised me even that, you know, that wasn't like an early hit.
Yeah.
He like, you know, came to it at some point, and, you know, it was a very...
And yet it became somehow that signature thing for him.
Well, yeah, because of the conga, because he was very much, you know, not single-handedly responsible, but definitely one of the reasons the conga became popular. He introduced it in Miami. And it caught like wildfire, and then it, you know, zoomed up the coast, got to New York. He came to New York riding this crest and became, you know, quite famous, you know, and then got into Too Many Girls on Broadway.
Who doesn't? But, you know, thank you so much.
Exactly.
Old episodes of Dave's Gone By don't die. They just get archived on CD and on the Internet. They're on CD for just $10, including shipping and handling. Makes a wonderful gift. But if you just want to listen on your computer, you can go to davesgoneby.org and see all the archives and listen to them free anytime at all, including a list of what's been on every episode of Dave's Gone By. So go to davesgoneby.org for all the information you need to know to hear me on CD.
Whenever old man trouble makes trouble arise, just pull that big straw hat over your eyes. You'll never see the circumstance making you frown if you just push your eyes under the crown.
Life can be a simple thing, a simple thing. To laugh and sing. Get yourself a hat of straw and put it on. Don't take it off. And pretty soon your troubles will come to an end, because you simply will not see them, my friend. To visualize permanent sun in the skies, just put that big straw hat over your eyes. The rent in arrears, just pull that big straw hat over your ears. You never hear the dialogue tragically grim if you just push your ears under the brim. Life can be a simple thing, a simple thing. To laugh and sing. Just get yourself a hat of straw and put it on. Don't take it off. And pretty soon your troubles will come to an end, because you will not see or hear them, my friend. To visualize permanent sun in the skies, just put that big straw hat over your eyes.
Now, with a name like Greg Pernhagen, people listening, I'm looking at you. I see certainly the resemblance to Desi, and certainly also to the Latin culture. But your name doesn't necessarily jibe.
This is true.
Why is that? And tell us the familial reason why Desi Arnaz is such a signpost for you.
Okay. Well, in a nutshell, I'm Cuban by birth. My father was Cuban. My mother is American. Due to, you know, another story someday in another show, I was given up for adoption. And so I grew up...
Well, you just weren't good enough. I mean, let's just be honest about that.
I don't
that.
Know. My parents always told me I was very special, and that's why they picked me.
Just kidding.
Anyway, but, you know, I grew up here on Long Island in Massapequa Park in what was basically... The dominant culture growing up was Italian-American. My mom's family was big, meaning my adoptive parents.
Right.
And so my dad's name is German-Dutch, and, you know, I grew up, you know, knowing that I was Cuban, because I always knew I was adopted. My parents adopted my younger sister also. And it was just, you know, it was a fact of life. There was no stigma. You know, nobody ever made fun of us. We were just like, yeah, we're adopted, you know, so what?
Sure.
But growing up, I always, you know, I watched the show as a kid, you know, just, you know, at some point when I was a kid, you could see it, you know, three or four times a day, it seemed like it was on.
Sure.
In the morning, it was on. You know, at supper time, it was on late at night. And...
And this is before even cable. This is, I mean,
cable
you can certainly find at any time.
Yeah, reruns, but, you know, and, you know, reruns, you know, on, I guess, like, I think it was on Channel 5.
Right.
And he, to me, was sort of my, I don't want to say example, you know, he was like...
More than an icon.
More than an icon, he was like, he was what I thought it meant to be Cuban. You know, he was this, you know... dashing, you know, musician, and he had the temper, and he had the beautiful wife, and but, you know, he also had the accent, and he had, you know, the funny way of, you know, speaking and referring to, you know, Cuba and being home and, you know, and his family, and so, I mean, I kind of projected onto him, and again, you know, it wasn't like I felt like I was missing something as being part of a family, because, you know, my parents loved me, and we were, you know, was very happy as a kid growing up, but I always also knew that there was this part of me that was kind of, you know, genetic and you know, intrinsic, and I had no one to turn to, and no one to, like, show me, you know, what does it mean to be Cuban, and it was Desi who really...
And also, I can see, you know, the physical resemblance, as I said.
Yeah, a little bit.
What did kids call you in high school? Your friend, actually.
My friends called me Ricky Ricardo. That's a lot of the time, yeah.
So at what point, though, did the idea of actually doing Desi and Ricky...
You know, now that I'm doing it, it's shocking how long it took, because, I mean, I've been working as a freelance musician and singing and doing a lot of different things for a long time. I did cabaret about... You know, gosh, almost over, you know, 15 years ago, I started doing shows just, you know, for fun, because I liked the American Songbook and I loved picking the material and arranging it.
Sure.
And then I kind of got out of it. And then after 9/11, I realized that, you know, if you really love doing something, you have to do it now. Like, don't sit around and wait. I mean, I was always, like, letting the rest of my career kind of make money, and that was, you know, where I would put my energy, and I'll just do the cabaret, you know, next year, and then next year became 2 years, and then it became 3 years. And so when I came back, I decided I was really going to focus and stick with it, and I made a list of shows, and I felt like the first couple of shows, I had to get my feet wet again and sort of get back into it. But then number four was this, you know, I called it the Desi Project. I called, you know, finding my inner Desi, you know, that, you know, a show that would deal with...
C, with Desi, D-E-S-I. Anyway.
Well, not the Indian one, but the Indian, yeah.
He sort of got me in touch with, you know, the Latino.
And you were telling me when we spoke earlier that initially you combined both things. You made the show the story of your life and how you got into it and your adoption and all that. And then the director said...
Well, when we decided, I shouldn't say we decided, when I became lucky enough to have some producers hear about the project, you know, in the cabaret form, they came to see it and they said, you know, we want to make it more theatrical and we think the most important thing to do is to put you into character the whole time. Like in the original cabaret show, I sang as him and then I talked about him and then there was a segment with Lucy and then I was pretty much in character and then I talked a little bit more about my personal connection, you know, because that's what cabaret is often about, is, you know, revealing your own, you know, yourself. But I totally understood what they wanted, and I said, you know, it made sense. I mean, I didn't even hesitate. I said, okay, you know, am I going for a slavish kind of rich little imitation, or can it just be, you know, as much of an embodiment as I can do? Because I don't resemble him identically, physically, but I look, you know,
well,
and, you know, and I get the facial mannerisms, and I, you know, the hands and the gestures, and I just, you know, I study him.
And what people might not realize, you know, we were talking, almost glossing over the cabaret stuff, but you also did a stint in modern, not atonal, but kind of serial music.
And I've done, a lot of minimalist music, and I've worked a lot with Philip Glass. And,
wow.
And that got me a gig singing on one of Bjork's CDs.
Now, you met Bjork only when you literally came in to do the gig.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was fantastic. She was doing an album that was mostly pretty much like 99% a cappella, and like she had written all this choral music and then done all these multi-tracks using her own voice, and then she was also working with a lot of like human beatbox guys and some other, you know, indie pop singers, and she needed someone who was like, she wanted a classically trained baritone who was really willing to be experimental, and you know, the guys at the studio said, you know, call Greg. And they called me and they wouldn't tell me who the project was for. They said, you know, are you free to do a session on, you know, next Friday? It's for a very special artist. And I said, okay, you know, I'll say yes because I want to know who it is.
Yeah.
And once they confirmed it and everything, they said, okay, you know, you're recording for Bjork. I was like, shocked and excited.
Did you have to sight read music when you got there?
I did.
Yeah, so that's how
we were having music faxed from Iceland.
Wow.
In the studio. And we just broke it down. I think I'm on three or four tracks. And
oh, which album? Sorry.
It's called
Volta or?
No. Oh, man.
Not homogenic.
Medulla.
Medulla, okay.
God, I think it's either 2 or 3 years ago. I almost forgot.
Went out of your head.
Exactly.
Ironically.
Yeah, hit me. So, you know, we would look at one piece at a time and I would look at the music and then she would play the tracks that she had already laid down, you know, that weren't fully produced yet. And, you know, she would talk about what she wanted and, you know, what she needed from me. And then we'd try a couple of things and I'd, you know, do some passes like a rehearsal. And then we would just go and do some actual takes. So, I mean, it was just the two of us in the studio with an engineer and, you know, her assistant.
Cool.
And so, you know, we got to talk a lot in between just about music and art. And, you know, I'm like in total awe of her.
Sure.
And, but, you know, she...
She wasn't dressed as a swan or anything.
No, but she, you know, she had a cute outfit on.
Okay.
It was very much her style.
It was Bjork-y, okay.
But she was really lovely and she was very focused.
Hmm.
And she was, you know, respectful of me because of, you know, what, you know, she knew what I had done with Philip Glass and working with Meredith Monk. And so it was kind of interesting, you know, I'm like in such total awe of her and her talent. And it was very nice that, you know.
And she liked you well enough that you ended up singing for her or with her again.
Yes, well, for her. She invited me to get something together for a Christmas party at her house with Matthew Barney. In
her husband,
the conceptual artist, and so I got some friends together, and we put together this very kind of eclectic but interesting Christmas program. You know, that had a lot of medieval music, which sounds almost like minimalism. Lot of it, it's kind of spooky and moody, and you know, no, we didn't do White Christmas or Jingle Bells.
No, okay.
I thought for this crowd, we'll do something really out there.
Or Dreidel for that.
And they loved it. They, you know.
Oh, that's great.
At that party, she was wearing Harlequin jodhpurs that were like pink and burgundy, these big diamonds. And then she had on this little green top, and on her, she was wearing a bowl of plastic cherries on her head.
And you didn't bring a camera, dude.
You know, I just didn't seem like, you know.
Even the camera phone could have whipped it out and sold it to National Television.
Wish we could have. I mean, my favorite part of the evening, though, is after we did the concert. You know, there were people all over the house, and, you know, and they had roasted a pig in the backyard. And so she brought us down to this huge kitchen, this old house on the Hudson River just above the George Washington Bridge. And the kitchen, you know, the pig is sitting on, you know, like the kitchen counter. You're just, like, stretched out for 7 feet. And people have been eating it, and there was all this food. And she's like, would you like some leftovers? And she started, you know, like, packing up food and Tupperware, and like, you know, like, here, please, you know, we have so much, take it home, you know, like giving us leftover roast pig.
Go figure, so. Bjork is a Jewish mother. So, by the way, are you married? Do you have kids?
No.
Oh, okay. Are you in the process of, or?
No, I'm, you know.
You are free.
I'm a free freelancer, but,
okay,
you know.
That's her.
Yeah.
Just one. I have one other question about Desi, because there's someone who wants to talk to Ricky Ricardo.
Oh, really?
It isn't going to be me, because, you know, I'm more on a one-to-one with you. Rabbi Saul Solomon has been a fan of I Love Lucy for many, many years.
No kidding.
He used to watch it 6 times a day, even though it was only on 4 times a day. So he's going to come in and talk to Desi. But I have a question about Desi.
Sure.
How much do you think of the Ricky Ricardo character was really Desi, and how much was he putting on?
I think it's one of those things where maybe it's not half and half, but certainly, I mean, first of all, they originally based the first script of the pilot was going to be based on their real lives, and he was going to be Desi Arnaz, the orchestra leader, and she was Lucille Ball, the film star.
Right.
And then they said he thought it was a good script, but he also thought that audiences wouldn't relate to them as celebrities. Like, so who cares if we have trials and tribulations? You know, at the end of the show, we still get a photo session for Life magazine. So they went back to it and made it, you know, a struggling musician and a wife who's frustrated and trying to get into the show so that she wasn't successful in her own right. And he really thought that the Battle of the Sexes was where it would resonate with a wider audience, and, you know, just this kind of, like, you know, timeless struggle. Then, of course, having the neighbors, you know, Fred and Ethel would just give them more chances and more opportunities to work on that.
Well, speaking of timeless struggles,
yes,
Rabbi Saul Solomon to talk to Desi Arnaz right after this message. Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor a show segment or the whole show. Just go to davesgoneby.org to see the rates. Or call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By.
¿Qué le hacemos a Babalú? Dame 10 17 velas, va a ponerlo en cruz. Y dame un cabo de tabaco, bañé, bañé, y un jarrito de aguardiente. Y dame un poco de dinero, bañé, bañé, pa' que me dé la suerte. ¡Yep! ¡A gozadera! Yo quiero pedir que mi negra me quiera, que tenga dinero y que no se muera. Ayúdame que quiero pedir a Babalu, una negra pintona como tú, que no tenga toro negro, para que no se muera.
Shalom, damn it! Oh, oh, this is a thrill for me. This is so exciting because I used to watch I Love Lucy so much. It was such a joyful thing. My parents would let me watch the television, just to see that because it was a domestic family. And even though they were Cuban, they had good family Jewish values. The father was always yelling, and the mother was making a mess. This to me is Jewish values. So it is exciting to me to talk to the wonderful, the exciting Babalu King himself. He's Babaluski, is how I would say it. Desi Arnaz, a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Rabbi. It's so nice to see you.
Oh, have you ever been to a synagogue? Have you ever... I've been Jewish friends.
I think I've been to a synagogue. I think I've sung in a few synagogues.
So have I. Know? And they've thrown me out for doing as much.
Well, you know, in my days when I was touring with the band, we would play any place they sent us to. So
it's like my early days as a rabbi.
I'm sure I played up in the Borscht Belt.
Really? Oh, yes. This is good. You can add a little salsa to the borscht and make it really spicy. It makes it nice. What is it like being married to such a dynamo like Lucille Ball?
Oh, you know, I mean, I tell people, first of all, when I want to assign responsibility for the success of I Love Lucy, I give Lucy 90%. Because without her, we all wouldn't
be here. Should be giving your agent 15%. That's what I do.
But, you know,
she used to take 10. Now he wants 15. He's asking for 18.
You got to watch those agents. They will screw you out of every cent they can.
I know it. I know it. But is she, when she's not Lucy on the screen, is she different? Is she what? Is she?
Well, you know, I mean, we are a little bit like our characters, so I think, you know, there's a little bit of the craziness, but she also, you know, she fights back. She doesn't always let me push her around the way even on the show, I mean, she's always scheming against me, so you can't say that I'm always in charge, even though I think I am.
Oh, the man is never in charge. Let me tell you something. My Miriam Libby stays home and has babies. Your Lucy, she had babies. She brought them to the studio 3 days later.
That's right.
She's a go-getter. That
oh, you know, I mean, Winchell used to joke that little Ricky's birth was part of the, or Desi Jr.'s birth was part of the script, because we timed it out so that we could actually air that episode on the same day that she was giving birth.
This is a calculating and a smart woman.
Oh, you know, and hey, you know, I had a little something to do with it, you know.
And you must be proud of the children you got, Lucy Arnaz.
Absolutely. They're so terrifically talented. I mean, Lucy she's just a joy to behold.
This is true. I've never held her, but I'm sure it's a joy to hold her. As an obviously Latin person, and I hope you take that in the way I mean it.
Well, I hope so.
Did you ever experience prejudice coming up as a band leader?
Oh, absolutely. Not so much as a band leader, but when we went to CBS, nobody wanted me. They used to call me the bongo player.
Oh, well.
And, you know, Lucy actually had to call the bat for me. She said, if the Cuban goes, I go. I mean, it got down to that, because, first of all, they didn't think anyone would believe we could be married. Meanwhile, we had been married for 10 years already. And we were an established couple in Hollywood. But, you know, they thought, oh, no, out in Peoria or, you know, in the heartland, they're not going to believe it. And of course, you know, my accent was a little thick.
No.
So, you know,
I've been told that too, you know.
My father always said that someday my mouth would catch up to my ears, but it never really happened.
I don't even... There's something filthy there. I'm not even going to go near. We only have a minute left with the wonderful Desi Arnaz. Can you do something for me that I would love? It's not Babalu. No, it is...
Okay. Ready?
You can start with Babalu. Can you do a Cuban version of Habana Aguila? Just Cuba it up a little bit.
Ha. Ha.
Nagila.
Oh, yes.
Ba. Nagila.
Yes, damn it.
Ba. Nagila Vesmachab. I don't even know the words, but I'm going to.
It was beautiful. I'm so happy. I wish we had more time with Desi Arnaz.
Ah, muchas gracias, Rabbi.
Everybody, go see Desi's very good friend, Greg Pernhagen, doing Baba Lucy at the Actors Temple Theater, 339 West 47th Street. And they can even go to, what's that guy's website? But he has a website, doesn't he?
Who has a website? Greg Pernhagen?
Yes.
Yes, www.gregpernhagen.com.
GregPernhagen.com. Thank you, Desi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
And please say Babalu.
Mazel tov. Babalu. 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 Aye. Babalu. Aye. Babalu.
Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It's a book. It's funny. I know because I wrote it. And you should buy it. At my website, davesgoneby.org. Are you reading me? Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine and TogleTheater.com. Yes, Inside Broadway here on Dave's Gone By on this last Sunday. Well, the first Sunday of fall, isn't it? It was
no,
the first day.
No, this is the last Sunday of summer.
Oh, goodbye, summer.
Ball starts tomorrow.
Well, they're not the boys of summer, but I do want to tell people, in case they didn't know, that the Yankees won tonight. They won 7-3 over Baltimore, last game at Yankee Stadium.
They won, but they lost their stadium.
Yeah, well, and Shea Stadium going next week. So, nothing much to say, because they spent 2 hours talking about this on the station, so I don't really have anything else to add to that. But, yeah, this is a nostalgia factor, the whole Lou Gehrig thing and the whole Shea Stadium.
Oh, now we're into the house that ruthless people built.
Oh, that's a new place, the place that are all tax dollars that aren't going to bail out the savings and loans. Isn't going for. It's going for all these new stadia. But anyway, enough of that kind of theater. Let's get to my kind of theater, Broadway and off-Broadway. And our first story in the Inside Broadway segment is, I'm not a madam, I'm a concierge. The Broadway Concierge and Ticket Center has opened at 1560 Broadway at 46th Street in Manhattan. It's open daily. And it says project by the Theater League. That's a bunch of Broadway producers who got together as a consortium. And it's a place where you can go and get free information about all the shows. Plus, you can go there to book Broadway shows and off-Broadway ones. Now, this is not the half-price ticket booth. This is full prices and also for the big VIP.
And what are they going to do with the concierge?
Well, that's what people, they can go there, get the information, buy the tickets. Also, you can go get hotel information, reservations, restaurants. It's for the tourist dollar, because they're the only people who can afford to be in New York anymore.
So do they tell them, like, what the plots are of the musicals?
Yeah, in other words, if a family comes in and says, what should we see? The Broadway concierge will tell them, well, this is appropriate for you guys, or you might like this if you like that. That sort of thing, or guide them to what might not be sold out. If they can't get into Wicked, they say, oh, well, maybe you like Legally Blonde, and then set them up, have them buy the tickets, get them seats in a restaurant. A nice idea, again, for that Euro dollar coming from overseas. And you know, so many other cities have something like that. Almost like a Chamber of Commerce thing.
Be a 1560 Broadway.
46th Street. Yeah, which would be a block away from TKTS anyway.
Yeah, which side of the street is that going to be on?
Oh,
I'm trying to think of where it's going to be.
I don't know. Probably near that Citibank and...
Maybe near that Bond?
What Bond?
Huh? You know, the Bond sign?
James Bond. I don't know. I have no idea. But what I do know is that we had a Broadway opening this past week, a musical version of A Tale of Two Cities called...
Can you hear the people sing?
Well, you are not the only one making a joke like that, because all the critics, almost to a man or woman, in their criticism of the show, which most of them did not like much at all, was like, well, it's Les Mis 2. Because it has the look of it, and it's got the moving platforms and the people running around in rags. And the first act ends with a big, rousing number of the people about to revolt. And I'm not going to give my review of the show this week, but I will say
it was
the reason people were saying it was much like Les Mis. If they would just change that Act 1 closer, maybe the critics wouldn't have been so quick to point at Les Mis and say, oh, here we go again. But here's a couple of what the big reviewers said about the show. This is some Eric Grody of the New York Sun. Eric was on our Tony show. He said, it's hardly the best of pop operas or the worst of pop operas. And pretty much half the critics I read did a play on that first line.
He was
line
the same guy who said, each generation gets the grease we deserve. Wasn't he?
I'm not sure if he was the one. So
I love that quote.
Theater Mania's David Finkel just called it a mediocrity. The Richard Ozonian of the Toronto Star, he made no bones about it. Quote, it was the worst of times. It was the worst of times. The cast seemed to have grabbed their characterizations from a giant basket labeled Dickensian theatrical cliches. And John Simon, who is not the meanest, said that James Barber as Carton with a kind of Barbra Streisand wig, unless a far, far worse thing it actually is his hair, looks a bit daft. He can sing, but prefers to bellow, croon, or whisper, the last, given the lyrics, especially considerate. And Elisa Gardner of USA Today said of Natalie Toro that she's even more of a caricature, singing about revolution and vengeance in a piercing shriek that suggests she's half expecting Robespierre or perhaps Simon Cowell to be in the audience. Well, I have to say, having seen the show, the audience liked it a lot more than the critics seem to. So, once again, I've seen this happen again and again, especially with these kinds of shows, going all the way back to Jekyll and Hyde and The Scarlet Pimpernel.
I agree with that. I think a lot of times the critics just don't want to like something, and it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, this came in pre-hated, pretty much. And it lived up to the hate spectrum.
They have the hate on, which I don't like.
And audiences go there. My aunt saw it. She loved it with her friends. I'll reserve my judgment until next week, but
too,
I'm not with those other critics.
Yet.
Well, there you go. You know, here's a nice show, a show that you like quite a bit, that unfortunately is going away soon.
I know.
And it is?
Zen Adieu.
The sleeper hit musical closes October 12th after more than 500 performances at the Helen Hayes Theater.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. I thought it was doing pretty well, too.
It had been, and they were making plans through the fall. It made it through the summer, so you would figure, but it was never a big, big moneymaker. It was always a sleeper hit. And what's kind of nice is that, for the most part, the whole cast stayed with it for the whole two-odd year run. Kerry Butler, Cheyenne Jackson, Mary Testa, Jackie Hoffman, Tony Roberts. Whoopi Goldberg was in there for a couple of weeks. But really, the original cast stayed with it, which is not all that common anymore. The show had 4 Tony nominations, including Best Musical. So you have one more month to catch Xanadu. And again, it's not so much a victim of the waning entertainment dollar as for being around this long and other producers just wanting that theater. And speaking of which, another show that is going to be closing that same day, October 12th, is a show that we kind of figured wouldn't have a chance, and it didn't. Title of Show. The little musical that tried to, it's been making no money. I guess it wasn't 9 people's favorite thing.
And I'm going back to see it at the beginning of the month, too.
Well, good. We'll catch it up then. I mean, it had its little run, and it'll be done, I'm sure, in every little theater, every community theater, every regional theater with a small budget.
I didn't know they were going to close. It's the first I heard of this.
Yeah. So October 12th, kind of sad, Yom Kippur-y kind of a day. I don't think it's the exact same day. But anyway, we do have some happier stuff to talk about. In a minute or two, I'll be talking to Iris Dorbian about a play that we both saw off Broadway called The Quarrel. And will we be quarreling about it or agreeing? You'll have to stay tuned to find out right after this.
Why?
you have no idea what to see on Broadway this season? Now, I got a magazine for you. Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway and beyond. Every show is listed with enough information to make you a theater expert, just like the professionals who've relied on PAI for 64 years. Get the most recent issue at PerformingArtsInsider.com. Dave's Gone By listeners get a steep discount on subscriptions, so visit PerformingArtsInsider.com for Broadway the best way. Broadway the best way it is, but also we do sometimes off and off Broadway on Inside Broadway. And tonight we're going to be reviewing a show called The Quarrel at the Darryl Roth Theater on East 15th Street. It's only there for a couple of weeks till the end of September. And it's a show basically about two Jewish men after the Holocaust. They grew up together. They were friends. They were in yeshiva together, but one went his secular way, and the other stayed in and became even more religious, and of course that becomes the bone of contention between them when they meet after a long, long time. So I saw it this week, so did a good friend of this program and of mine, Iris Dorbian. Iris, are you there? Iris, hello?
No, my ears still haven't recovered from that Xanadu song.
You don't like Cary Butler doing Xanadu? What's wrong with that?
I'm still in shock.
Oh. Well, the fact that Xanadu's closing or what?
No, the music.
No, it's a great song. It's very catchy. It's ELO. Anyway, what did you think of The Quarrel at the Darryl Roth Theater?
Well, I mean, I thought it was pretty interesting, but, you know, it didn't really present any real fresh insight on something like this, like this chasm between these two men, you know, divided by religion. One goes the secular route and the other one stays very religious. I just didn't think it was fresh, to tell you the truth.
Well, it's not that fresh because the material is a good decade old. It was originally a film, and then the authors, David Brandis and Joseph Telushkin,
I'm sorry. You know what I thought was really interesting?
What?
I thought it was interesting that the I don't know if it was a choice on the actor's part or maybe it was the writing, but I thought it was interesting that the religious character was, for me, far more sympathetic than the secular one, who seemed, again, I don't know if it was a choice on his part or the writing, who seemed kind of arrogant, smarmy.
Well, this is a very bitter man, the secular one. He lost his family. He lost his wife and kid in the Holocaust.
Yes.
So he is angry against God, and he's probably angry also against all the people who didn't turn their backs on God when God turned their backs on him. So I understand that bitterness.
Yeah.
And also, we're probably more likely to identify with the more secular man.
Well, that's what I meant. So it was very interesting that I found the religious guy more sympathetic, considering that, you know, as you know, I'm not exactly religious.
No.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. I guess my only real quarrel, no pun intended, is that I just didn't find it particularly fresh or original.
Yeah, I mean, I like
dated. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, for me, the argument is always fresh. I mean, we're never going to, until, if there ever is a Messiah and he comes, that'll answer all the questions. But until then, to me, it's always a fresh argument. Where was God during the Holocaust? Where's God now? And how do you believe and how do you put your belief into your life? To me, it's just, as a play, it's an argument. It's a dialogue, a dialectic.
But you know, maybe it's because there was for such a point, an unrelenting deluge of Holocaust-themed dramas where the same things are brought up over and over again. I think it's just tired.
Yeah.
I think the material's just tired. I think that was my complaint. I said I've heard this before.
Yeah, my complaint is that it's not that the argument is tired, but that the framework is just to have the argument. And that the men aren't that particularly interesting. I mean, they're brought together to have this conversation, and that's it, you know?
Yeah, and it's just, and again, exactly. It just comes out of nowhere. Oh, they just meet, you know, in Toronto. Park. Just comes out of nowhere. And you're right. Their characters are not particularly interesting. And in a way, they're both cliches.
And mouthpieces.
Exactly.
You know what it is to me? It's like, this is the kind of thing that if George Bernard Shaw were Jewish,
he would make this like the middle of a second act of one of his plays.
But he would make it far more interesting.
Well, he'd make it more intellectual, yeah.
He would make it more intellectual, but he would also make the characters a lot more interesting,
I think.
He's a tremendous writer. I mean, I'm very biased when it comes to him. So.
I will say, I do think there are moments in the play that are kind of touching. I mean, anytime somebody mentions a name of a person, and all the one has to do is look at the other to know that that person didn't make it through, you know, through Europe, through the Holocaust. I thought that was kind of. And also, I should say that just as a caveat, one of the actors, the fellow playing the secular Jew, Sam Gunsler, is an old friend of mine going back to my NYU days. So I have to kind of put that out there to be fair. But I thought it was okay. I was just like, eh, it was all right. Interesting to a point.
I guess like if it's raining out and you want to take shelter from the storm, this is an okay way to pass an hour.
You know, actually what's even better, especially if it's raining out and you need shelter and something to do, is to read a book.
Yes.
Maybe a book about, like, I don't know, Broadway producers or something. Do you know of any books like that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I know this one book that's very close and dear to my heart. It's called Great Producers, Visionaries of the American Theater. And it was just released by Allworth Press about a month ago. And the author is myself.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, all right. I don't play surprise very well. So who are some of the producers that you interview in the book?
Well, let me say, I interviewed Daryl Roth, a very well-known detective, Daryl Roth Theater. We just mentioned that.
That's right.
Let me see. Jack Vertel, who's the creative director of Jude Jameson, Roger Berlin, a longtime producer, Andre Bishop, who's the artistic director of the Lincoln Center Theater, Margot Lyon, she's the producer of Hairspray.
Wow.
Fran Weisler, who has produced a lot of shows with stars in them. Cameron McIntosh, I'm sure
you've heard of Cameron McIntosh. What was he like to interview? Was he interesting? Was he dry and British? Or
he was very dry and British, and really very funny and very candid.
Oh, cool!
I was very, very surprised about it. And he had some really great stories in there. Like, for example, about how he kept railing against the instant communications that we have nowadays, like meaning email. And he just said what was really great that when he got started, because he was kind of this hungry, sort of struggling producer who was short on funds, is that he banked at several banks, and it was really great because by the time he just said that the problem with instant communications that he couldn't do what he did when he first started, which was basically wait several weeks until the check clears, which is stave off the creditors. Like nowadays you can't do it, but he could do it back then, you know, because we didn't have email and instant communication. So that was pretty funny, and I found him very candid, and it was very interesting because I had read an interview with him that he gave to this PBS series called Broadway, the American Musical.
Uh-huh.
This was before I interviewed him because I know the producer and the writer of that series, Michael Cantor, and he gave me a copy of the transcript of his interview. And one of the questions that Michael asked him, which was not included in the series, was how would he like to be remembered? And Cameron McIntosh said that he really didn't want to be remembered because, you know, who remembers who produced Shakespeare's plays? You know, a producer really shouldn't be remembered. Well, it was interesting because I asked him the same question because I was curious whether he would give me the same answer.
Yeah.
He didn't. He was actually a lot more heartfelt and kind of sentimental, and he basically said he would like to be remembered for being the person who changed the face of musical theater in the late 20th century.
And you could have said, hey, look, people do remember that, say, David Merrick was the producer of Fanny and Jumbo and Hello Dolly. I mean, people kind of remember that 50 years on.
David Merrick is a producer that I profile. I did profile Four Dead Ones.
Oh, that's good. The interviews must have been pretty boring on that, though.
Well, actually, there were 10, because the title goes, I really wanted to focus on great, usually successful producers.
Sure.
And the editor and I, when I was working on this, we both agreed that I should talk about some of the legendary producers, which include Ziegfeld, David Merrick.
Belasco, David Belasco,
right? And also Joe Papp.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very, very well-known producer. So for them, for the other producers, the ones who are very much alive, I did interview them all, and I also interviewed people who worked with them. But for the dead ones, I did do a lot of research, but I also interviewed people who have worked with them, including, believe it, a 104-year-old Ziegfeld Folly.
Wow.
I don't know if she's still alive.
A Folly girl, wow.
Yes, but she was alive 2 years ago when I started working on the book, Doris Eaton Travis. And, who worked with Ziegfeld, well, who was a Ziegfeld Folly when she was a young teenager.
Wow.
And it was very interesting to get her insights, and she's still really spry, bless her.
And so people can read your profiles of all these producers, living and dead, in your book. Tell again the title and where people can get it.
Okay, Great Producers, Visionaries of the American Theater. The publisher is Allworth Press. You can get it on Amazon.com, and you can also get it in Barnes & Noble. It's in all the Barnes & Noble stores. If you're in Manhattan, it's in the Drama Bookshop. If you're in L.A.,
somewhere in L.A. If you're in Iceland.
Samuel French. I mean, it's basically at all, most of the better bookstores.
Well, the best bookstores, because it's a book written by you, Iris Dorbian. Thank you so much, by the way, for being part of Dave's Gone By once again, and for being on Inside Broadway. Congratulations on the book from Allworth Press, and be seeing you on the aisle and certainly back here on the mic on Dave's Gone By.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
We've just been Inside Broadway. Thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. You've heard my voice. Now see my face. I'm Rabbi Sol Solomon, and I'm on TV every Wednesday and Friday morning at 7:30 on Cablevision Channel 115. Watch Shalom Dammit. I talk about Jewish culture, holidays, Edward James Olmos, whatever I damn well feel like. Shalom Dammit, Wednesday and Friday, 7:30 a.m., Channel 115. Or Channel 67 in New York City on Sunday afternoons at 1:30. Or anytime on YouTube.com. Shalom Dammit. Put the face to the voice. Here are 15 reasons why you should visit the Woodrow Delicatessen in Hewlett. Brisket, hot open roast beef, barbecue chicken, chicken fricassee, Polynesian chicken, frankfurters, stuffed cabbage, Romanian tenderloin, fresh turkey off the bone, matzo ball soup, French fries, corned beef, pastrami, seven-layer cake, and Hawaiian chicken salad. And here are three more reasons. The Woodrow is kosher, open daily in the Peninsula Shopping Center, and they cater. Woodrow Deli. How many reasons do you need?
Dave's gone by.
They're gone by.
Dave's gone by.
They're gone by.
Dave's gone by.
There goes the neighborhood, and time does go by when we do this program on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, closing out the Dave's Gone By program. If you're waiting for gospel, it'll be another 5 minutes or so, because the gospel folks haven't gotten here yet, but there will be gospel music tonight, we promise that. Just have to close out the show first. So I want to do some thank yous and reminders and all that. So first of all, thank you to our wonderful sponsors, Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229 for all your party decorating needs. Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229. Remember, it's not just balloons, it's centerpieces, it's big archways and decorations, and it can also hook you up with all the other things that you need to make a party great. Ask for Jeff at Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Also, Hewlett Minuteman Press, family owned since the 1970s in Hewlett, 1315 Broadway, right next to the former Lowman's Shoe Store, and 10% off for any job, big or small, at Minuteman, 569-5577, open 6 days a week, 569-5577, area code 516 at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Performing Arts Insider, Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway for 65 years, with a very, very special discount for Dave's Gone By listeners. It's the journal and your information source for everything happening on, off, and off-off Broadway, performingartsinsider.com.
has all the information. And thank you especially big this week to our brand new sponsors, Woodrow Delicatessen at the Peninsula Shopping Center in Ulit, Long Island. Absolutely delicious food. My family's been going there for more than 3 decades now. I'm there a couple of times a month and eating everything from the tenderloin to their chicken dishes to, my God, of course, pastrami and corned beef and brisket sandwiches. I know all the people there. They know me. I love them. I don't know what they think of me, but hopefully they like me now. I don't have actually that many enemies. I'm trying to make some more just to keep things lively. But certainly we have a friend in the Woodrow Deli. Please go there. Tell him Dave sent you. You can have a wonderful lunch or dinner 7 days a week at the Woodrow. Reminding everybody that Shalom, damn it, Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour is on Wednesday and Friday mornings at 7:30 on Woodbury Cable Vision, channel 115. And that's for one more week, and then it's going to change times in October. And it's going to, I'll tell you next week when the new times are, so it's not that confusing. But you still have one more week to catch it. Pardon me. Wednesdays and Friday mornings at 7:30 on channel 115. And you can also watch it on Manhattan Neighborhood Network's channel, Sundays at 1:30 in the afternoon on channel 67. And remember, all the episodes are watchable on YouTube.com anytime at all. Remember, again, that we've migrated all these shows, 50 recent episodes of Dave's Gone By, onto davesgoneby.org. You can listen to them as podcasts, or download them, or just hear them right on the site, davesgoneby.org. Also, look on the WGBB schedule, am1240wgbb.com, for episodes of Filler Up. That's a weekly music program that I do, half an hour, where I play eclectic music from the folk and rock and pop worlds. You know, this show, I do a lot of talking. That show, it's 95% music. So check it out. It plays at different times during the week. So check the WGBB schedule page at am1240wgbb.com. I want to remind everybody about a couple of things about some of our recent guests. Tova Feldshuh is appearing in Irena's Vow off-Broadway at the Baruch Performing Arts Center through November 2nd. That's speaking of Jewish themes, about a housekeeper who defies the Nazis to help Jews. Starting September 23rd, well, that was this week, watch Jamie DeRoy and Friends on Tuesdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, channel 67, on the aforementioned Manhattan Neighborhood Network. Michael Leiden is, that was last week, I don't have to mention that. Or that. So I want to do a couple more thank yous before we have to get out of here. Greg Pernhagen, thank you so much. And everybody catch Baba Lucy at the Actors Temple Theater. And we're going to be hearing his version of Desi Arnaz's Straw Hat song to end this program. Thank you also to Penny Landau of Maya Public Relations for setting all that up. I want to thank my beloved and adorable and sweet and great wife, Joyce, as always. And thanks and shout out to my great mom and dad, and to my in-law, mom and dad. Hi to all of you and to everyone else. And thank you to my co-host, who is snoozing as he did at my party, Jeff Goodman. Eyes closed. Do you want to give us a little snore, Jeff? Nice one. Very nice. In the upcoming weeks, knock wood, going to have a live guest next week, the one and only return. Well, it won't be his only return, hopefully, but Art Paul Schlosser will be back in the neighborhood, the street singer from Milwaukee, Art Paul Schlosser. And also coming up soon, Carol Edmonston, who is the niece of the cartoonist Sid Hoff. Remember him with the cute Danny and the dinosaur? Really cute stuff. Going to talk to her about her uncle. Okay, it's time to leave the neighborhood, just like we have to leave Yankee and Shea Stadium pretty soon. But I will be back next Sunday, September 28th, with the 292nd episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night, babanu, and toodle-oo.
And gone by.
Aunque no quiera yo, ni quieras tú, lo quiere Dios. Hasta la eternidad te seguirá mi amor. Como una sombra iré, perfumaré tu inspiración. y junto a ti estaré también en el dolor. Aunque no quieras tú ni quiera yo, lo quiere Dios. Hasta la eternidad te seguirá mi amor. Hasta en tus besos me hallarás, hasta en el agua y en el sol. Aunque no quieras tú, aunque no quiera yo. Until that lucky day you come my way.